This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Goodbye, Ma Bell. AT&T says so long to copper wires. The Germans try to get a glimpse of their gold, and the already long holiday shopping season gets, yes, a little bit longer. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace podcast for Thursday, the 8th of November. And we mark today what might well be the beginning of the end of a very long era, the days of copper wire connecting your phone with somebody else's phone. AT&T is going to spend $14 billion on new infrastructure, not a dime of it on the old copper network. Most of us are going to be okay, right? We've got computers and cell phones and tablets to pick up the slack and new plumbing like fiber optic cables to connect it all. But what about grandma? You know, people who just want no-frills, dependable, affordable dial tones. From Washington Marketplace's Scott Tong made some calls for us.
AT&T's investment builds a telecom future of faster, fatter pipes for our calls and our video. But it's different pipes. Even calls from home travel less and less over the old school copper lines. Telecom consultant Roger Entner is with Recon Analytics.
Copper is very limited compared to what you can do with fiber or with the most advanced wireless technologies today.
But there is a trade-off.
Are we going to give up some of the reliability of a copper network? Quite possibly.
Reliable universal service was part of the social contract when our phone system was first built out. That's important to poor rural users who may just have a phone line, says consumer advocate Harold Feld at Public Knowledge. He says New Yorkers learned about copper's reliability in Hurricane Sandy.
People who had cable, VoIP, or even Fios were trying to find payphones because that old copper technology held up.
While the others didn't. Feld also wonders how affordable the new telecom world will be.
Because there's no rules for these new networks, they can decide, well, we're happy to sell you our phone service as part of our, you know, cable service and data service, but we're not interested in selling you just a phone service for $25 a month.
The question is, as we move into a post-copper world, whether to bring with us the old copper safety net. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
If you happen to frequent a certain fast food joint, one that has served billions and billions, perhaps, you might have noticed they're not selling quite so many these days. McDonald's said today global sales were off last month, the first such drop in nearly 10 years. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has that story.
Part of what's wrong is obvious. The slowdown in Europe and Asia has consumers spending less. But that and the still recovering American economy are only part of the story.
In fast food, it's just become more competitive.
That's Bonnie Riggs, restaurant analyst at NPD Group. McDonald's is still king, so it's hyperbole to say competitors are eating its lunch, but they are taking some serious bites out of its breakfast. RJ Hottovy, senior restaurant analyst at Morningstar, says that time of day is critical to McDonald's.
It accounts for roughly a third of the overall business, and recognizing the opportunity that the breakfast hours represent, you've seen a number of competitors get into that space.
Customers still flock to McDonald's for cheap food, but the chain needs to sell more expensive dishes, too. Joe Pollack is with the food consultancy Technomic. He says McDonald's is losing business to slightly higher grade joints, what the industry calls fast casual.
Chains like Five Guys, Panera Bread, Qdoba, they are starting to encroach on McDonald's spaces. Many consumers today are actually willing to pay a little bit more for what they perceive to be a better meal.
McDonald's isn't giving up on that business. It's fighting for it with vibraphones. That's the loungy soundtrack for the new cheddar bacon onion sandwich. Every ingredient has a premium adjective attached. The bacon is hickory smoked, onions caramelized, and cheddar, well, it's just white. McDonald's hopes you'll pay $4.50 for it. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
I can die now because I've officially heard everything. Okay, repeat after me. The stock market drop is not about the election. The stock market drop is not about the election because it's really not, you know. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. From the Marketplace desk of things you maybe didn't know this today. Something like half of all the gold that belongs to the German government, $80 billion worth, plus or minus, is kept in a vault deep in the bedrock underneath the New York Federal Reserve Building in Manhattan. At least, that's what everybody thinks. The Germans haven't been allowed to check on their gold in a good long while, and they're getting a little anxious about it. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard explains.
Peter Gauweiler has a pet obsession. A conservative politician from Bavaria, he admits he has a bee in his bonnet about Germany's gold reserves. In his office in the Parliament in Berlin, he frets about the 1,500 tons of German gold officially held by the New York Federal Reserve.
Die Goldreserven in den USA.
The German Central Bank is required to count and weigh the gold it holds every year. But our gold reserves that are kept in the US have not been weighed or counted once in three decades. That is rather unsettling.
He's calling for an audit of Germany's bullion held in the US. Better still, he'd like it repatriated.
Grundsätzlich kann es sinnvoll sein.
The fact that Germany has so much of its gold reserves in America is a legacy of the Cold War, when, as the newsreels reported, West Germany was menaced by the Soviet Union.
Endless cars of vitally needed coal are stalled by the Russian blockade of Berlin.
To keep its gold well beyond the Soviet reach, Germany lodged the bullion with the US. Jan Randolph of IHS Global Insight says this was also a way of forging closer links with Germany's most important ally.
Germany felt that somehow this cemented trust with its Western allies while Western ally forces were on German soil warding off the Soviet threat.
Today, the Soviet threat is long gone. Now Germany faces an altogether different menace. The Eurozone debt crisis has sparked angry protests in Greece, Spain and elsewhere. The pressure is on Germany to bail out its southern neighbours, and many Germans don't like it.
I think there certainly is a sense of being besieged, that Germany is just the paymaster and gets very little in return.
Gunnar Beck is a German-born lecturer at London University. He says in this climate, Germans feel anxious about their national wealth. They want to be sure they can count on their gold.
I think the euro crisis forms the background to what is perhaps a slight paranoia in Germany right now.
The mood was not improved by reports that the New York Fed was refusing permission to German politicians to visit the gold on grounds of security. Adrian Ash is with BullionVault.com, a company that holds some 30 tons of bullion in Britain for private investors.
We send independent specialists into the vault once a year to conduct an audit, to do a tally count, to make sure the bars are in good order.
And the New York Fed could do the same.
The New York Fed could certainly do the same. There's every reason to conduct an audit every so often.
But the German central bank seems too embarrassed to ask the US for an audit. It might imply the US cannot be trusted. A Bundesbank official says these reserves are not stored with some dubious business partner, but with highly respected central bankers in the United States. Some Germans, however, do not seem reassured. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The White House figures about 300,000 education jobs have disappeared since the Great Recession technically ended 3 years ago. We've been hearing from some of those teachers the past couple of months. Today, Danielle Lawson. She's a single mom who was laid off back in August from her job teaching special ed at a different kind of high school, one inside Chicago's Cook County Jail.
With my personality type, I'm a square peg. So I think alternative education has always been somewhat of my niche. Can't teach much to my six children, but I just really discovered that I have a knack for hard-to-reach youth. I must admit that the students at the Cook County Jail High School taught me well. They knew how to be resourceful. That is the reason why I am able to, quote unquote, work the system. I'm in the process right now of negotiating with my mortgage company in order to pay my mortgage. I've had to give up my truck. I bought an old car off Craigslist. The other day, I had to go get a link card. It's like food stamps. My children make comments almost on a daily basis about me being unemployed. Two of my children actually embarrassed to get free lunch. So they're insistent that I still pay full lunch, or with my car, I have to park around the corner to pick them up. They don't want anyone to see me in an old car now as opposed to my truck. I think I've invested too much within Chicago Public Schools to look elsewhere. Maybe if I can get a contract in D.C. or Detroit, some aspect of education. It's my calling.
Amy Scott produced that story for us. Coming up.
Pretty much when I get home, I just sit myself down in front of my computer and go on YouTube.
Which is exactly why that company is spending a whole lot of money on stuff for you to watch. But first, let's do the numbers. On Wall Street today, fiscal cliff, part duh, the Dow Industrials fell 121 points, 0.9%, closed at 12,811, the blue chips did. The NASDAQ gave back 41 points, 1.4%, finished at 2895. The S&P 500 down 17 points, 1.2% there, closed at 1377. Good news about American exports was drowned out by investor concern that politicians aren't going to reach a deal to avert tax hikes and spending cuts, which is the definition of a fiscal cliff. Those fears have knocked 433 points off the Dow since Tuesday, if you're counting. McDonald's, we told you about. Today, the burger chain's share price dropped 2%. On the flip side, Wendy's picked up 3% today. On news, the fast food rival reported higher same-store sales. Bond prices, well, they rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.61%, and you're listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. The U.S. Department of Agriculture releases its monthly crop report, looking at everything from soybeans to frozen concentrated orange juice. JCPenney issues quarterly earnings. And the first edition of Rolling Stone magazine was published on November 9, 1967. John Lennon appeared on the cover. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. I'm afraid I have some bad news to pass along. Truly, truly. Horrible news. Thanksgiving comes as early as it possibly can this year. That means the holiday shopping season will also be as long as it possibly can. And honestly, you'd think that'd be enough for retailers, but no, some of them, Walmart specifically, are starting their Black Friday sales at 8 o'clock Thursday, Thanksgiving night. At long last, have they no decency? Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has the story.
Forget setting the alarm clock. By opening at 8 p.m. on Thanksgiving, Walmart is taking pity on those of us who are not morning people. Sarah Spencer is spokesperson for Walmart.
The hours are exactly what our customers want. They told us that they'd rather stay up late than get up early.
This is part of a trend. Retailers start earlier each year. Last year, it was 10 p.m. on Thanksgiving. Morningstar equity analyst Michael Kira says the hours are less interesting than Walmart's guarantee that certain discounted loss leaders will be available in stores.
A lot of consumers have been complaining as they go into these Black Friday events, they wait in line, that a lot of times they don't get the item they want because they're out of stock.
Walmart guarantees that consumers who are in its stores between 10 and 11 p.m. on Thanksgiving will be able to buy, for example, a 32-inch LCD TV for about $150. The big question is, will Walmart's strategy result in more sales? They need it to. Consumers have been distracted by the election and haven't started shopping as early as they did last year, says Britt Beamer, chairman of America's Research Group, which tracks consumer behavior.
Whether they'll do that much more volume is really the $64 billion question, but I do think they'll do more volume.
Rival retailers have matched early hours in the past. Analysts expect Target, Best Buy, and Toys R Us may follow suit this year. We may as well start calling it Black Thursday. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Among the few, the very few, lamenting the end of the presidential campaign and the incessant advertising are local television stations. They made out with all that ad time they were selling. Of course, that didn't leave much time for companies to try to buy 30 seconds here and there. That has changed now, as Josh Rogers reports from the swing state of New Hampshire and New Hampshire Public Radio.
Political ad spending in the market that covers tiny New Hampshire topped $60 million this year. A good chunk of that cash went right to WMUR, the ABC television affiliate that is the only station with statewide reach. Jeff Bartlett is WMUR's general manager.
We ran more political ads during this entire year than any previous year, a little over 20,000 ads.
The presidential campaign spent big, but so did super PACs and candidates in the state's hotly contested races for governor and Congress. This drove up rates across the board.
Corporate clients, retail clients, people who need to move inventory in the fourth quarter, they're not happy about this.
New Hampshire ad man Pat Griffin says some clients move their advertising to radio, print, or online. Others simply went dark. But Griffin himself kept busy. He also produces political ads for Republicans. An election year like 2012, he says, offered boom times for political ad makers and TV stations alike.
You're sitting there, and your biggest problem is you can't write the orders down fast enough.
But like all market bubbles, there does come a pop. Now, if you want ad time during a WMUR newscast, prime real estate prior to the election, station manager Jeff Bartlett has three words: step right up.
It'll be 70% cheaper for a while.
Bartlett says the rock bottom rates will last about a couple of weeks. Holiday advertising is, after all, just around the corner. In Concord, New Hampshire, I'm Josh Rogers for Marketplace.
On the off chance you're having election withdrawal, allow me to direct your attention to Beijing, China today, where the world's second biggest economy has convened what is formally known as its 18th Party Congress. It's a week-long event where the Chinese leadership chooses its successors, and our man in China, Rob Schmitz, was in Beijing bright and early this morning to catch the opening speech by outgoing President Hu Jintao. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Kai.
So there was this big speech by Hu Jintao today. How'd it go?
Well, let me read the title of Hu's speech to you, and I have to clear my voice for this one. Firmly march on the path of socialism with Chinese characteristics and strive to complete the building of a moderately prosperous society in all respects.
Wow, that's really Chinese, actually. I love that.
Oh, man. That's great. That's the speech was 101 minutes long.
Wow.
And the title summed it up pretty well. He's been known as one of China's most boring leaders, and he certainly went out that way.
There must have been something, though, I mean, of substance in this thing. What did he actually say?
Yeah, I mean, he did offer some strong warnings, even for him, against corruption. At the 95-minute mark, he said corruption could cause the collapse of the party and the fall of China. Of course, he was referring to a bunch of corruption scandals lately, including the murder case involving party leader Bo Xilai and his wife earlier this year. Yeah.
What about the new guy, Xi Jinping? Did he speak, actually? And what does he have sort of on his plate?
No, Xi hasn't spoken yet. He will speak at the end of the party Congress. Okay. And, you know, he's the incoming president. He has a really tough job. Most economists here agree that China has to reform its economy and take money from its enormous state sector and put that into the private sector. And they say that'll foster more competition, more innovation, create more jobs, and it'll hopefully allow more market access to U.S. companies. But doing that means he's going to have to start breaking up the monopolies at these huge state-owned enterprises and join the marketplace here, and that's not going to be popular with what are very powerful vested interests in China.
What's the sense of how he's going to do? I mean, you know, public polling doesn't really exist so much over there. But what's the vibe about how he's going to do?
Well, he previously was the party boss of Zhejiang province, close to Shanghai. And economists say in that job, he was pro-market. So there's some hope that he is market-oriented. He understands the problems China has, and he understands that China needs to rebalance its economy.
Yeah. We should remind people that this is not your American political convention as we know it. It's a much different thing, and it's a much different attitude and environment out on the streets of Beijing, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at one point this morning on the way to the Great Hall of the People, I noticed there were more police and security personnel than just real civilians along the street. Taxi cabs in Beijing have been instructed to disable their windows to prevent people from throwing leaflets or other material out the windows in protest. I was in a cab yesterday where the driver had removed all the window cranks in his car. And here's what he told me.
I don't know the specifics. I only follow orders. They asked me to take them off, so I took them off. I do what they tell me. I don't ask why.
Wow.
And another thing drivers were told to watch out for are people with ping pong balls.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, ping pong balls. So for those of you who are planning on writing subversive messages on leaflets and then inserting those into ping pong balls and then throwing them from your cab in downtown Beijing, the Chinese government is so on to you.
It is a different place over there. Rob Schmitz in Beijing for the 18th Party Congress that's going on this week. Rob, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kai.
You know, probably, about all the cat videos, and you might have seen the one of that kid acting all goofy after a visit to the dentist. They have gotten millions of hits on YouTube, and people love them. Advertisers, though, are a bit more leery of one-hit wonders like those. So YouTube has been plowing hundreds of millions of dollars into original programming with a sharp focus on the increasingly diverse 35 and under set. Marketplace's Queen of Kim reports.
Nico Young may be the future of home entertainment. At least, that's the bet YouTube's making.
Pretty much when I get home, I just sit myself down in front of my computer and go on YouTube.
Mystery Guitar Man here. Thank you so much for watching this video.
Nico lives in Santa Monica, is 13, and of mixed race.
My favorite YouTubers would be Mystery Guitar Man.
The Mystery Guitar Man is a musician and video maker whose channel on YouTube has 2 million subscribers. He's from Brazil, but lives in America. Nico's also a fan of Glozell's.
Hello, this is Glozell.
Glozell's fan base is tweens and young teens. And if you're not one, her appeal is hard to understand.
So 150 kabillion people have been asking me to do the cinnamon challenge.
In this video, Glozell swallows a cupful of powdered cinnamon, and the results are predictable. This video has 21 million hits on YouTube, and Glozell's channel, where you can find all her videos, has 720,000 subscribers, mostly young and racially diverse like Nico. Malik Ducard is the director of content partnerships for entertainment at YouTube. He says online channels are the third wave of home entertainment.
You had in the 80s broadcast. There were five networks. Then you kind of move into the late 80s, early 90s, and you have cable channels. We see a third wave where online is really able to deliver content to audiences.
And YouTube believes that by funding these channels, it can create consistent, high-quality programming that'll attract advertisers just like TV. Brad Adgate is a research analyst at Horizon Media. He says traditional TV will bring in $70 billion in ad revenues this year. Online videos, $3 billion. Not exactly a contest, but Adgate says that if YouTube can keep up its momentum, that could change.
CBS and ABC and primetime have a median age above 50.
By contrast, nearly half of YouTube's 128 million users in the U.S. are under 35 and people of color. Adgate says mainstream broadcasters have had trouble bringing in that group.
Some of these YouTube channels have been very successful in putting on content that's appealing to various ethnic segments of the population.
By some estimates, minorities will be the majority in the U.S. by 2050. And so YouTube's made funding channels by people of color one of its priorities. It's funding big stars like African-American hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons, but it's also taking a bottom-up approach by selling advertising for channels like Glozell's and funding the production of Asian-American channel Yum Yum F and the sitcom Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, which already had a loyal fan base on YouTube. Issa Rae is the creator of The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. She says YouTube is taking a different approach than mainstream TV.
When you do have a show of color, it's like specifically geared towards what they think is a monolithic group of people. And that's just very, very much annoying.
Rae says on the web, notions of race and racial sensibilities are fluid. In fact, Awkward Black Girl was inspired by Jewish and English comedy shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm, Seinfeld, and The Office.
Am I the only one who pretends I'm in a music video when I'm by myself?
My booty shop.
Rae plays awkward black girl, and like Seinfeld, she finds herself in awkward situations. She's driving along, hardcore rapping, when a guy from work drives up next to her.
I know, right?
What's the protocol for repeatedly running into someone at a stop sign? And how many fake laughs are acceptable?
I know!
Today, Rae has 92,000 subscribers, and her series appeals to a diverse audience.
I think that YouTube and online shows are great because it allows the people in between and the people sort of at the bottom of the totem pole to say, hey, look, this is what's popular. Pay attention.
And network television is paying attention. Thanks to Rae's success on YouTube, she's recently been picked up by ABC to co-produce and write the new sitcom, I Hate LA Dudes. I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note on the way out, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has instituted odd-even gas rationing in the wake of two storms and continuing supply problems. Odd-numbered license plates get to buy gas on odd-numbered dates, evens on evens. It's going to happen on Long Island, too. Rationing has been the norm in New Jersey for a week or so now. Bloomberg said only 25% of the city's 800 gas stations are open right now. All right, that's it for us. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow off 121 points, 0.9%. The Nasdaq gave back 41 points, 1.4%. The S&P 500 down 17 points, 0.2%. John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Sylvester Monroe, Dave Shaw, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The acting managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. My name's Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Bye. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.